This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be on what is an inquest and how do they work. I am joined by barrister Amy Rees from Red Lion Chambers in London. Amy provides advice and representation in cases involving serious violence, acid attacks and grievous bodily harm, and she has particular experience with inquiries, inquests and expert reports. Amy is regularly instructed as part of a team in various predominant inquest and inquiry work. Thank you very much for joining me today, Amy.
Hi, Hattie. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. So, inquests and inquiries, and what are inquests and how do they work? Well, now, this is quite interesting because I was just saying to you, wasn't I, that before, when we were looking up the statistics on this area, I read that in 2019, out of the 210,912 deaths that were reported to the coroners, only 527 inquests were heard. And I just thought that's quite a small number in comparison, and it was only slightly up from 2018. Now, we're not dealing with 2020 so far because the COVID, the pandemic and what is going on is, I'm sure, going to have some staggering figures in this regard for next year. So let's just tell our listeners, Amy, please, what do we mean by an inquest? What is an inquest?
So an inquest is the name for a legal process or procedure to investigate and find out the facts about a person's death, where that death has occurred in certain circumstances. So the function of the inquest is to seek out the facts around the death and to record these. And I suppose the second function is also to learn from those facts or mistakes and to try and prevent future deaths happening.
Right.
So an inquest essentially determines four key questions about the death. One, who the deceased was. Two, where they came by their death, when the deceased came by their death, and finally, how the deceased came by their death. It's that how question that usually requires the most attention and can be the most controversial.
Yes, no, I hear you. And that actually answers us quite nicely why they're so important, because if it cannot be answered as to how somebody died, an inquest is utterly crucial to this process, to answering that question.
Exactly. And when an inquest is conducted properly, it has quite a unique function because it's about understanding the truth of what happened in the particular circumstances of that death. It's not a trial process to establish who's the criminally responsible or who might be liable in civil law. It's about finding out the facts, which for some families might be exactly what they're after. And it's also about raising concerns with appropriate authorities in order to prevent future deaths happening in the same way. So it's quite a constructive area of law, actually, looking to prevent future deaths.
Right. And who would instruct for an inquest to take place, Amy? Would it be the family, the public? Will it be a government body? Who would normally say, right, we need an inquest into this death?
So it's the coroner that decides that, and the coroner is essentially the type of judge that presides over an inquest hearing. And so not every death will have an inquest. Normally, if there's a death certificate which has a cause of death that's been certified by a doctor, and there's no reasons to think that that death was unnatural in any way, that's not going to have an inquest. But coroners have a duty to investigate certain deaths if they have reason to suspect that the deceased died a violent or unnatural death, or that the cause of that death is unknown, or that the deceased died in custody, for example, in prison or whilst detained in psychiatric mental health hospitals. In those cases, then the death will be reported to the coroner, and the coroner will determine if there is an inquest necessary to determine the answers to those four questions.
Right. And I'm going to ask you this because I need to know. Who reports the death to the coroner? Is it the hospital? Is it the police force? Is it the last medical persons that were attending to the deceased?
It can be a variety depending on the situation, really. But often it can be the police force, or it can be the medical teams, but often it's the police force.
Right. OK. Now, let's talk about an Article 2 inquest, because that just sounds complicated, just saying that. But let's talk about what it is and why is it so important.
Sure. Well, some inquests are called Article 2 inquests. And Article 2 refers to Article 2 of the European Convention on Human Rights. And Article 2 essentially is the right to life. And part of that right to life includes a procedural obligation on the state to investigate certain deaths. So where the state or any kind of agent of the state might have failed in some way to protect the life of someone, that's what that really means. So it means that part of what it means to have the right to life includes the state having a responsibility to provide an effective investigation into certain deaths, so, particularly where a state might be involved in that death.
So they're an enhanced inquest, aren't they? And they're held in usually in cases where it's agents, let's say police force or whichever agent, government agent, was responsible for that person at the time, failed to protect the deceased against a human threat or a risk, or where there has been a death in custody.
Exactly. And the practical impact of an Article 2 inquest is, do you remember those four questions, the who, when, where, how? In an Article 2 inquest, that fourth question, the how the deceased died, is broader. It's interpreted as meaning in what circumstances the deceased came by their death. And what that means is that the inquest can consider broader issues around the death. So the investigation might extend to, for example, in a prison, the training that prison officers might get, or the systems in place in that prison, or the management or organisation in that hospital or in that police force. Mm. So these broader issues are the types of issues that might get considered in an Article 2 type inquest.
Right. And it's a more in-depth, a more detailed, as we said, a more enhanced process of an inquest that's taking place.
And exactly.
And who would instruct an Article 2 inquest? Would it again be the coroner to say, right, okay, a standard inquest is just not going to do. We're going to have an Article 2 inquest in these circumstances.
Yes, all the decisions in an inquest are made by the coroner. And actually, the coroner has quite a unique amount of control over the process. But that's not to say that the coroner has to, the coroner has to listen to the arguments of all the parties in the inquest. And it might be that the bereaved family think it's really important in their case that there's an Article 2 inquest. And so their lawyers might explain to the coroner why it's important and why that type of inquest is appropriate. And
sure.
Different parties will be able to make arguments as to why that might be the case.
Okay, so we've talked about an inquest not being a trial. Now, there is a jury present, and that's what threw me. When I was researching this area, I thought, well, hold on, because when I think of a jury, I think of a trial. Naturally, you think of a courtroom, you think of that kind of environment. So who are the different parties in an inquest? And you've said as well, it's not a trial. So who's involved?
So you have the coroner, who is like the judge of the proceedings. And they conduct the proceedings, they carry out the investigation, they make requests for evidence, material. So they're quite an active person in the proceedings, maybe more active than a traditional judge. You might have a jury. So not all inquests will have a jury. Some of them will have a jury. The circumstances where there might be a jury are whether the person died in state custody or detention. Or if the death resulted from the actions or omissions of a police officer. So there are certain circumstances where there must be a jury, but there also are circumstances where there might be a jury, where the coroner can decide you know what, in this case, I think the public interest is that there should be a jury in this case. The other people who are involved in an inquest are called the interested persons. And they're going to be everyone else who has a sufficient interest in the death. So that would include the bereaved family if they want to participate. And it might include, so if it was a death that happened in a hospital, it might include the hospital or particular doctors. If it was a police involvement, it will include the police force or particular police officers. If you are an interested person and you're the bereaved family, you get certain rights in the process. You should get copies of all the material that's going to be part of the inquest, so all the evidence, you'll get to see it. You should get it with enough time to look at it properly. You should get to play an active role if you want to.
I was just going to ask that, actually. As an interested person, does that mean that you can turn up and sit in the room, in the gallery somewhere, or what kind of, whatever kind of setup it is? Or does it mean that you can participate and put your comments or your thoughts or a statement forward of some kind? So, yes, it's quite interesting to find out about the interested person, so to speak.
Yes, the interested persons play this active role. They can ask questions of the witnesses.
Isn't it extraordinary? Because it's not a trial. But yet it almost, as we're describing and explaining the whole setup and process and who's involved, and you say, you know, the coroner's like the judge and the jury can be brought in, and then you could have legal representation if you are an interested person and an interested party to the person, the deceased. It does just feel like a trial. I mean, it's extraordinary.
So it's supposed to be non-adversarial, which means it's supposed to not be like a trial.
Right.
And it's supposed to be what's called inquisitorial, so asking questions to find out the truth. But you're quite right to raise this, because reports by many families, which can be read online, often say that they feel the process can be quite confrontational. And it can feel quite adversarial to them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really,
I can imagine, you know.
Yeah, I think it's really up to all the different parties to try and ensure that's not the process, because that's not what the aim is about. But I suppose if you have a particular party which might be quite defensive, so maybe a hospital body or a particular doctor that might think they might be the subject of criticism, that could create a more confrontational environment.
Yes.
But I suppose what's important to remember is that everyone has come to this process in order to find out the facts of what happened and make sure this doesn't happen again.
And I was just going to say that, I mean, you know, the bottom line is it's a fact-finding exercise, isn't it? Now, what obviously none of that is confidential in the sense that a coroner's report is public records, isn't it, Amy?
Yes. And the principle of having inquests in public is a really important one. It's the principle of open justice that applies in lots of court proceedings, but particularly in inquests it might be more important, because one of the key purposes is to provide that public scrutiny for the responsibility of the death. So it's really important that these are public proceedings, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, even though it's not a trial, an inquest hearing is not a trial, the information and the final report of a coroner can be so key to what happens next, particularly if it's an Article 2 inquest, or even if it's not an Article 2 inquest and it's concluded that this person died as a result of, you know, the failings of a department or body that was should have been responsible for the person that died. Very interesting stuff. Let's talk about, because I think you have to talk about it in this day and age, COVID-19 and the bereaved families of COVID-19, of which, you know, there are just too many. It's extraordinarily sad, and it's the way that it is. In what circumstances, Amy, would there be an inquest into the death of somebody who died from COVID-19? I mean, what, you know, how likely is it that a coroner will say, okay, I'm happy to do this inquest, even though on the death certificate I'm being told to put down, or we're being told that it was a death as a result of COVID-19?
So in general terms, a death is only investigated and is subject to an inquest if the coroner thinks that there's been an unnatural death or any of the other factors we discussed before. And COVID is a naturally occurring disease, so in itself is not an unnatural death. So a COVID death alone, with no extra circumstances around it, is not going to be referred to a coroner. But there are some circumstances where a COVID death would be reported to a coroner. So where there's reason to suspect that there's some human failure that's contributed to the death, then there would be a requirement to open an inquest. And there's also a piece of law which provides that if the medical practitioner who's completing the cause of death certificate thinks that their death is linked to the employment that the person had, then that might also be a reason why something should be investigated.
So are we saying in that circumstances, for example, you were asked to go to work, you went to work and you think you it's thought that you contracted the COVID in your workplace. Is that what we're saying here?
Yeah, that might be a circumstance where a coroner might look at having an inquest. I mean, the obvious example is probably a death of an NHS or frontline emergency worker who died from COVID after exposure in their workplace. If there's some reason to think that some human failing contributed to that death, and it might be that the human failing in that case, I'm just hypothesizing here, but it might be the lack of
PPE.
Exactly. Yes. It might be the rationing of access to ventilation. It might be the availability of testing in the early stages of the pandemic. But I think the example of an employer not providing adequate PPE might be the type of thing which we might see inquests looking at.
Well,
however, there's a big but here, because there's quite a lot of law that says that the inquest is not supposed to be the place where you examine big, broad public policy issues. It's supposed to be examining the particular circumstances of an individual case. So bereaved families shouldn't get their expectations raised that an inquest is going to look at these massive, broad public policy issues about whether the government supplied all the hospitals with the correct PPE.
Or if indeed the government made the right decisions by saying, if you cannot work from home, then continue to go to work. You go into your workplace because your employer, as an example, tried to provide a very safe environment. However, you know, it's thought and concluded by somebody that you contracted it because you went into work. I mean, whoever knows? Because people are carrying COVID without showing any symptoms.
Yeah, so, yeah, exactly. There'll be lots of evidential issues here about, you know, what the evidence really is. But although an inquest is not the place to examine these big, broad questions of what the government did, it could well be the place to examine the adequacy of PPE in a particular hospital, in a particular individual case, at a particular time that contributed to a particular death. So it's not to exclude those issues at all. And it might be interesting to see if there's a public inquiry, actually, into the government's handling of the COVID pandemic, because a public inquiry is different to an inquest.
That was going to be my next thing, you know, in the sense that what's the difference between an inquest and an inquiry, and what's the relationship between them?
Well, an inquest is the specific fact-finding process to determine the circumstances around an individual's death. A public inquiry is a different type of process. It's much broader. It's set up under a different type of law, and it can explore a wider range of issues of public concern. It's called for by a government minister. The government minister will appoint a chairperson, that's usually a judge. An inquiry will have what's called terms of reference. So whatever those terms of reference are, those are the issues that the inquiry will look at. So it can be a lot broader than an inquest.
Interesting. Well, Amy, that's all we've got time for.
Oh,
I have to say that went past so quickly, and it's so interesting. We certainly have to do a part two, because I've got so many more questions buzzing around in my head about this subject. It's seriously interesting. It's a subject that, to be honest, I've only probably seen the majority of the information I know about it is probably from the films, from the movies. So I think there's lots more that we can talk about to cover in terms of what happens after COVID and next year. You know, what's the landscape in inquiries and inquests going to look like this time next year, or even before this time next year, to be honest.
Yes, definitely.
So thank you ever so much for joining me today. It's been a pleasure having you on our podcast.
Thank you, Hattie.
And what I'll say to our listeners is don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcast. And you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening.